Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, today we're talking about immigration and who has skin in the game. We sit back a lot of the time, and when we think about immigration, the first thing that pops up in your mind, we start thinking about Latinos. We start thinking about Mexicans, Guatemalans, Ecuadorians, all the people from Central and South America who crossed the southern border. And we never really give a whole bunch of thought to the Africans, the Asians, the Eastern Europeans, the Canadians who cross our borders, some who are here, who are documented, and some who are undocumented. We also never really, we have a very complicated relationship as an issue in, with immigration from the African American standpoint. So today we're gonna talk about who has skin in the game. Stacey, before we start off, we know we started something last week, new to the show called the Dirty List. So Stacey, break off your dirty list.
Well, I think we share. We got one common thing on our dirty list, but I think on my dirty list as a woman. This thing with Planned Parenthood, it's really, really, and it's, I know it's a controversial topic for some people, but, you know, we've seen these gotcha videos come out, and Planned Parenthood is something that's personal to me. My daughter, she had to go on birth control pills at a very young age for a medical condition, and once she left our once she turned 18 or was dropped off of our insurance plan, the only way she could get birth control that was affordable was through Planned Parenthood. There have boogeymen and the thing that's selling body parts, and it's just really, really ridiculous. This has been a right-wing boogeyman, and, you know, Planned Parenthood is definitely needed in communities like mine, particularly with budget cuts that are cutting health services to women. Nonprofits aren't getting the money in to provide the services, and it's just ridiculous, all the hyperbole behind Planned Parenthood and them getting wee-weed up. And then the second one that I have is, you know, the ongoing, just the madness going around with these women who are popping up dead on police custody. This is really nothing new. We just happen to be learning the names of a few. I believe there was five in the last week who died under mysterious circumstances in police custody. But we're able to say their names. There's a lot of names that we aren't able to say, because we don't know. And if you talk to anybody who has been in the correctional system, they can tell you where people have died and they put the prison on lockdown. They keep the communication from coming out there. So this is a story that is, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. But let's talk about your big, we were talking about this before we went live on the air. So tell us, what's on your dirty list?
I got actually like three items on my dirty list, but we talked about two of them. One is on my dirty list is the protest over at Stone Mountain.
Yes.
And this is why.
Say, can you see?
Yeah, okay, because this is my thing. And this is why it's on my dirty list. I have no problem with people assembling and speaking their voice because I'm a major proponent of the First Amendment to the Constitution. Because of this, this way some of this stuff, this protest ran out, this rally, it connected to the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Because there was all of these open carry folks out there, which I am in support of open carry myself as a blue steel Democrat. But my problem with why this made my dirty list is that you have protests taking place in America on a regular, everyday basis, okay? Particularly with those dealing with Black Lives Matter. We got protests dealing with immigration. We have protests dealing with Native American people. And every time we have protests, we notice that the police come in very aggressively to unarmed people using tear gas, mace, pepper spray. They want to beat you, but you never see them get turned up when you show up to a rally and there's open carry.
Mm-hmm.
So my question
it depends on the people who are open carry. Let a bunch of black people with some guns get out there.
Exactly. But, you know, we usually don't show up to our protests with guns. So my thing is, what is this about? And I feel another show coming on about this, but then I'm gonna let that move. Second part of my dirty list also deals with the Stone Mountain protest. Why are all these folks up in like a tizzy because Congressman Hank Johnson showed up out there? I ain't gonna tell you no lie. I big ups to Hank, because if you were going to have a protest of that nature about this particular issue and you was in my congressional district, I am surprised there wasn't more elected officials out there. But seeing in particular, because this area in around Stone Mountain is very highly populated with African Americans, I don't see why we were not out there and counter protest, and why our elected officials are not out there talking to these people, finding that, okay, you want to keep your flag. I represent
right.
you too, because some of these people lived in our district. I represent you too. Tell me why we need to keep your flag. Explain to me your side of the issue. Explain to me why is it the heritage to you and not hate to you. I give kudos to Hank Johnson for going out there to ask those questions, because that's why he went out there. That's what he said that's why he went out, because he wanted to hear their side of the story.
Right.
Now, for all of us who are complaining about that, learn what representative democracy means. Learn why we are a republic, because that was elected officials are supposed to do. Just because the man is black don't mean he's supposed to be hiding from, say, Andrew's cross. He's supposed to be out there confronting it, because some of his constituents fly the St. Andrew's cross. The third thing on my dirty list is that, I mean, I'm getting a little confused about some of the zero-sum games that are taking place in the progressive movement. Why, you know, and it's the same thing that, and I'm not going to say it's just the progressive movement, the zero-sum games that are being played in the political realm in America today.
Mm-hmm.
Immigration is one of them. That, you know, if the Republicans are for it, even if it happens to be a good idea, the conservatives have a couple of good ones every once in a while, or if it's the progressives who come out with an idea, the other side is automatically going to be opposed to whatever it is without looking at the depth of the situation and finding out does it really work or does it not really work. And this is why Americans today are not voting. This is why they're not in the system, because the average American is sitting around asking the question, why are you against that? Why is that bad? Why is this good? It makes sense to me. So we sound like a bunch of idiots sitting around in the political spectrum when we polarize ourselves, and that's what my third dirty list is about these zero-sum games that we're playing. But let's get on into this conversation about immigration, because, I mean, to me, you know, we was talking about this, you know, before we was talking about the shows we wanted to do in the future. We was talking about this in particular because we hear a lot of African-Americans, when we get talking about immigration, they sound like Republicans. They want to build fences, send them home, get them out of our country. They taking our jobs. you know this, that, and the other. And do you sit there and say, well, why are you saying that? Because we don't need them Mexicans here. Oh, hold on. What about your Nigerian brother that lived two doors down?
Exactly. What about your Caribbean brother?
Or your Haitian, or that cute Haitian girl you was eyeballing at the grocery store? What's her thing? You know,
and when you look at
the Canadian dude that works with you at work, he's from Toronto. Okay?
Right. And when we talk about economics in the Black community, what people forget is that, I believe, I don't have the exact quote with me because, the exact number, but I believe it's around 40% of all new businesses are started or led by immigrants. So, it does meld over into other aspects of issues that make Black Lives Matter. And it's very, very hard. You know, I worked on immigration reform with a coalition here in Georgia. It was under the Alliance for Citizenship. And one of the jobs that I had was to do outreach to the Black community. And I'm going to tell you, Scout, it broke my heart to talk to people, some who have been in the civil rights movement, who, you know, I'm like, you know, let's talk about this and talk about how we can get more Black people. Because if you were to look at immigration reform in the U.S. right now, it's all about Latinos. They have become the new villains in this. And it's really just insert this name here because it's the name, you know, first it's the Irish, you know, then it's the Chinese, you know, it's whomever. There is a fear of a particular group, and that's how our immigration laws since the early 1900s have been crafted to limit and target specific groups. There was a time when we had no quotas. So, you know, I'm listening to people talking, and they're like, "We ain't got nothing to do with this. They're taking our jobs, you know," and like you said, you start hearing these buzzwords that you particularly hear out of the right wing. And I'm like, but you work on civil rights. You don't see the synergy that exists between our, you know, the African-American struggle, which is still ongoing, and what's being done to the Latino community specifically by those who are very vocal, very wrong, and the problem is people are listening to them because they vote and they threaten these politicians on these issues. Because when you talk to the business community, business likes immigration reform. Business realizes how good it is. But Black people to sit there and say that Mexicans are taking our jobs. Oh, you mean the jobs that you won't do? You know, because most of the, you know, we see a lot of labor when we talk about immigration, we think about people, you know, working in the field. And these are jobs that nobody, white or Black, are willing to do anymore. You know, we have the stories that the farmers in South Georgia who couldn't get anybody. Remember when Georgia passed all the laws and we had the mass exodus and everybody left and the farmers in South Georgia were crying? They had stuff rotten in the field.
We couldn't get no onion picked. No,
you couldn't get nobody.
This is the other thing, immigration reform. We talk about the jobs we won't take. I mean, now, on my mother's side of the family, on her mother's side, my grandmother's side, they were brick masons. And that job, that trade got passed on from father to son, uncle to nephew, this, that, and the other. I mean, I can lay a brick wall because I watched my uncle Alfred, he showed me how to do it. You know, he showed me how to put up sheetrock, how to, you know, build walls. But did I want to grow up and build walls? Nope.
you know, I mean,
want to do it.
And
but
let's
you gotta
be honest. But let's be honest, anybody who came to America and you weren't of European descent, you had to pick something or build something or take care of their kids in order to stay here.
And every immigrant population has done that. America was built on immigration, because you're exactly right. It was either you're going to pick something, build something, or take care of somebody's children.
And
but
that's
then you get one or two generations into that immigrant, that fresh through across the border, off the boat, off the plane immigrant. Two, three generations after that, their kids, unless you had somebody start a major business or something, is not going to do the same things that the first generation did. So mm-hmm. we always in America, the way America has been built and constructed, is always going to need a fresh immigrant population to keep it going. Because we get two or three generations into this thing, I mean, even if we go back and look at the, you know, back to the Pilgrims, the first original European settlers, they got here 1607, you know, late 1500s, they had to pick, build, and take care of each other's children. By the time that second generation got in there, they was looking for somebody else to do the work. So the Indians weren't going to do it because they was getting sick or running from them. So then they came to Africa. They got a good hit there. That's what the first immigration did them some good, because we didn't worry about any immigration in America till the late 1860s. Early 1870s. Why? Because we were importing all the immigrants we needed for free labor through the act of slavery. So then you got a generation outside of slavery. Okay, we had to have somebody else to come in and do some work. There was the Chinese. And a lot of people don't realize that the railroad, at least coming from the west toward the east, was built by Chinese labor.
Exactly.
Whereas it was going east to west was built by Irish labor. Regular American white men was just sitting on the horse. Black folks was, you know, we were mixed into that group too, but we were attempting to try to catch up to the we were attempting to assimilate into the American economy similar to the white man. And that has been every goal of every immigrant group that has ever come across, to assimilate into mainstream white America.
Mm-hmm.
We want to get into finance. We want to become store owners. We want to be property owners. Everything that was the epitome of what white America built. And I'm not saying that white America built something that was wrong, but that comes a part of that white privilege we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that you had white America need to take responsibility for. The system that we have was built by you, and everybody's attempting to attain that because you have made that the gold standard.
Right.
And then you hear folks talking about
they built it.
Racism comes into play, because then you know that's the gold standard, and you start trying to pick and choose who you're going to allow from the other groups to achieve the gold standard to you. So you place systems and things inside of this construct to limit the how many people can get the upflow into the gold standard of the American dream. And it's now being focused on immigration the same way. And we as African Americans should have this understanding. And so me and Stacy does a really great job when I come up with a crazy idea. So she found this interview from a guy. There's a guy named Derek Washington. He did an interview with Angela Davis 3 years ago. So we want to make sure that Derek Washington gets his credit. But he did this interview with Angela Davis 3 years ago. And we're going to play this interview right now. So everybody, we're now going to play this interview.
This is why I think young people are so important in radical movements, because young people are often willing to jump out there and willing to make mistakes. I think it's important that we include the mistakes as a part of the learning process, as much as we include those strategies and tactics tactics that have led to victory.
Okay. Are you, first of all, are you a supporter of the Dream Act?
Oh, absolutely, I'm a supporter of the Dream Act. Yes.
And why do you feel it's important?
It's important because it represents one of the most important arenas in the ongoing struggle for civil rights in this country. And particularly those of us who have a history of struggling for civil rights, I'm speaking very specifically about the African American community, it is our responsibility to support, not only to support the Dream Act. One of the points that I always try to make is that the Dream Act is extremely important, but it's only one small step. It's not even something that we should be struggling about. It should have been taken for granted, but it wasn't. And so, therefore, we have to all come together in support of the right of young people to get an education in this country. And, of course, another part of the Dream Act is to join the military. And it's so bizarre that... even for those of us who are opposed to militarization and militarism, it's so bizarre that people are allowed to serve in the U.S. Army and don't get citizenship as a result.
When you talk to a lot of black people about this, and I'm black, and when I talk to black people about it, a lot of them don't feel like we have a dog in the fight. Do you think we do? And if so, how would you explain to a person who says, that's not my fight? How would you explain to them that it is?
Well, you know, absolutely. It is a cause that black people should embrace. One of the things that we need to remember is that the victories that have been won in the struggle for black freedom never would have been possible if only black people were the ones who were active in those struggles. This country... vast numbers of Latinos, I can mention, for example, Elizabeth Bettina Martinez, who was a major figure in SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I know my case would not have been won as it was had not it been for the activism of the Chicano community in San Jose. When I was tried on charges of murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy, in San Jose, there was a very minuscule black community there at that time. And it was in the Chicano community that the major organizing took place. So I don't understand how people can assume that it's possible for each racialized ethnic group to go it alone. Black people certainly have received assistance from people in this country and throughout the world. And as people who have benefited from these freedom struggles, it is our responsibility to continue. Justice, as Martin Luther King pointed out, is indivisible. And justice for black people must be used on behalf.
Well, that was the interview that Derek Washington did with Angela Davis 3 years ago on the Dream Act. And I mean, you listen to what Angela Davis says about the struggle for equality and civil rights from the African American point of view, and how other groups, ethnic groups and national groups, have always come in and helped us achieve the victories that we have achieved in the battles, not the war. And this is one of the things we have to say, that the war, the major fight for equality in this country is not over. And it may never be over. So there's going to always be a need for alliances to take place. If you take and do the comparison of, let's say, World War II to the Civil Rights Movement. In World War II, you had to have the Americans, the French, the British, the Chinese. You had to have, you know, resistance groups, all kinds of, you know, nations came together to defeat three powers the Germans, the Italians, and the Japanese. Three powers it took the rest of the world to attack them and push them back. And it was easy struggle. So why do we as African Americans think that we can fight this major struggle against something so large and so monolithic without help? Why do we, you know, we have to combine with other groups to help them achieve their goals and we achieve our goals and work together in a synergistic type of way to achieve these things. Because to tell you the honest truth, if you really sit down and look at all the different immigrant groups and you look at African Americans, we all share a lot, at least 80% of the same values, have 80% of the same struggles. Yet we it's almost to benefit to the opposition for us to stay in our little silos and claim, you know, a singularity in effort. Because as long as we're not working together, then the enemy never has anything to worry about before it comes to a victory.
Right. And that's the biggest thing and the most hurtful thing that I encountered working on the issue and trying to make that appeal to the black community was the disconnect that we saw. And it actually dilutes the collective power that can be made on this issue because, you know, we look at the numbers. And, you know, I think it's about a little over 3 million of those who live in this country that are black. I think it's 3.3 million. That's the figure. And they only make up 9% of the immigrant population. That immigrant population really does have power to make change, and the black community needs to rally behind them in order to get that change to happen, along with the Latino community. And, you know, like you brought up earlier, it's not just Latino. You know, I'm from New York, and let me tell you, when I see immigrants, what I see of in just as much numbers are up in the Northeast, particularly Boston, you know, New York, the Tri-City area, you see immigrants of Russian and Irish descent. And they are flying under the radar on this, but they're all fighting the same fight. But
you there?
And this is part of when we talk about systemic racism affecting all aspects. Underlying the whole immigration reform, we can see this. A lot of black people don't understand. When the Latino community comes out and talks about deportation, do you really think they're just deporting Latinos? And when we have things such as, you know, issues such as racial profiling that's going on, particularly in New York, which was really made an issue and was a big thing around Mayor de Blasio's campaign, you know, stop and frisk. Once they get stopped and frisked, you know, if you look like you don't belong here, and that's basically what the template is. You know, if you have a surname that is not unquote American, you know, you can find yourself caught up. And we've seen some cases where there have been people who have been apprehended, stuck in these detention centers. Some of them may have been considered by DHS as a criminal for something, you know, everyone has done something stupid in their past. But if you've been here and you've led a good life, you play by the rules, you work, you pay your taxes, you know, you participate in the fabric of America, and then all of a sudden somebody shows up on your doorstep and says, you know what? You stole a candy bar, or, you know, you got caught up smoking a joint a few years ago. We're going to have to send you back. And they're sending you back to a country where you may not even be connected to. where everyone that you love, your business, your family, everything is right here in the U.S. So what is, you know, and we're silent on that. And we need to stop being silent on that because, you know, what the Latino community is going through, just insert your name there because you are in this game. So, you know, it's really, really hard to continue to see the lack of black organizations and some lawmakers stay out of this game. We have Representative John Lewis here in Georgia, the 5th Congressional District. I'm a constituent, yes. He gets it. There are some Democrats who get it. And as a matter of fact, just recently, 178 of the House Democrats sent a letter to the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson to urge him to end the harmful practice of family detention, you know, detention that is destroying families. I got to give big ups to
another connection for the immigrant community that we should understand in the African American community, the splitting up of families. We got to think about it that, you know, in our history, we know we still suffer from the generational curse of having our families forcibly ripped apart. And, you know, we say, you know, when we talk about this African, the African and the Caribbean interjection to the African-American community, now we know that brothers and sisters, both of those of us who are multi-generational American, we, you know, descended from slaves, we know we have a weak spot for that accent. Whether or not it's male or female, we know we have a weak spot. So there's a lot of intermarrying taking place between us. And one of the things we don't ask is, what's your immigration status? You speak English, you got an accent, you got a job, we married, we have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens that day that you, and I know there's probably African-Americans out there who have married Africans, and you don't automatically become a citizen when you get married to somebody who's a citizen. You don't need automatically get your green card. You just get some privileges to expedite that situation. So one of the questions we ask is, what would you feel like if you're an African-American man or woman who's married to an African or Caribbean immigrant, and ICE come knocking on your door wanting to take away your children's mother or father, your spouse, away from you, to send back across the way, separate from you? How would you feel then? Would you be willing to fight the fight then? Would you be willing to fight if it's your neighbor who is going through this? Because it very well could be your neighbor. Or is it the guy who cuts your hair? Is he going to get deported? Is it the guy or the lady who works at the Jamaican restaurant where you like to get them jerk chicken?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the members of her family in jeopardy? Because it's all encompassing part of our community. And if that affects you, then it should be affecting you when it's your Latino neighbor or it's your Asian neighbor. We keep forgetting about them also. Because there's a whole thing when it comes to Asian immigration, because then you start talking about human trafficking. And it all,
right.
And you start talking about all kinds of things that's attached to this immigration issue, because it sure takes place in the Latinos because they're smuggling. You got Asians smuggling. So if they do it, I'm sure there's Haitians and Jamaicans and Africans who are smuggling people to the United States. I was just watching Al Jazeera not too long ago talking about the immigration issue in Europe. They're smuggling in Europe. I promise you they're smuggling into the United States. So the question is, we are looking at if it was not such an issue for us the way our laws are constructed, then it's just like illegal drugs. You're creating a market because of the legality of how our system is set up. The American system is set up that you commit a crime some kind of way or another. But those crimes are usually looted. So you now got human trafficking mixed in with this. So now you got young women being maneuvered across borders to so-called do housework or sex slaves, all because people want to come to America. And America still, and we say this all the time, is the greatest country on the face of the planet Earth. Has the potential to be the model of what human society should be. But we fall
right.
short because of the racist element that exists in the American civil discourse. Because we always got that original sin of racism attached to us. For some reason, there's a group of people in this country, and they don't make up a majority, but they have enough money and enough power to will that they see dividing us as being a profitable endeavor. Because as long
right.
as we're not talking to each other, as long as we're not talking to each other, we're not having cross-cultural exchanges on a personal level and finding out what our experiences are, then they can continue to propagate these myths about one another that they propagate amongst us that keeps us divided, that keeps us from fighting them. It even happens with regular, you know, let's say pilgrim-descended white Americans. They have certain stereotypes and things that they're thinking in their head about all the different other ethnic groups that exist in America. We have things we think about them, and that's been propagated by a few who are against immigration reform, they're against voting rights, they're against civil rights, they're against gender equality, income inequality. You name the problem in America, we can trace it back to these people because it's profitable. And that's
mm-hmm.
why African Americans should have skin in the game, because if you broke down America into groups who had skin in the game, from the way that the country has been constructed, it's first going to be white people, then it's going to be us. Because for the longest time, I talked about this earlier in the show, from the 1600s to the late 1860s, the only immigrant population that came to this country in major numbers, what were we worried about was the African, because we were the ones building America. Our capital, our roles, you name it, it was Africans had a major hand in building it because we were the free labor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the second half of the traditional equation of America. So we got skin in this game because whatever happens in America is going to happen to us. It's going to affect us.
Right.
So,
and no, go ahead.
So when you look at all the different groups, even when you're talking about Canadians, I mean, we have Afro-Canadians who moved back to the United States. They originally, most of their families were from down here anyway. They eventually come back down here. It's warm. Hell, you know, I don't know too many black folks that really like extreme cold. I'm being funny now, people, but still, you know, they're moving back to the United States for the jobs. You know, some of them are moving back because there's larger populations of African-descended people to congregate with, to build relationships with. It's here. So we have all of these different groups of people who are coming to America that we as African-Americans, we deal with them on a regular basis. Because if you're getting your nails and hair done, you're dealing with immigrants. Mm. You buying your weave, you're dealing with immigrants. If you like, you know, food other than soul food and hamburgers, and you like Thai, Jamaican, Indian, you're dealing with immigrants. And you know how we black, but we like the ones of us who claim that we are knowledgeable and in the know, we like to take and experience different things in our world. So immigration is important to us because that's how we get our experiences and come into contact with these people. We ought to care. We ought to care.
And it expands, you know, no matter what you advocate for. You brought up sex trafficking and human trafficking. A lot of ways that is done is through the visa system. You can come over here on an educational visa or a work visa, and as long as you're working, you're permitted to stay here. That gives an employer an extraordinary amount of control over the worker. And you see this a lot with Russian immigrants who are being brought here, but it also extends to all races where you you know, exploitation really is an equal opportunity concept. So, you know, you will get people saying, you know what, I'll bring you to America. You work for me, for, you know, I'll pay your fees, whatever, we'll get you processed. And you work for me X amount of years, and, you know, you'll get your freedom, which sets up a form of an indenture. But what often happens is that these workers get here. They're being exploited. They're not being paid fairly because these employers are skirting around labor laws. And these workers, they're not just working in the sex trade. They're cleaning up office buildings. They're
mm-hmm.
working in menial jobs, and you probably pass them every day. And they're not. And what makes it bad is that they're being intimidated by these employers, because if they say something, they got to go back. That's not what they're trying to do. So you've got people under the thumbs of unscrupulous employers who are taking advantage of the immigration system, at the broken system that we know it now, and making it work for them. And another point about immigration, particularly for the black you know, community, is that a lot of African and Caribbean immigrants are coming over here. They're not sneaking through the border. They're coming on a plane, right? Most of the time
mm-hmm.
they're coming on a plane. So the reason you don't call, you know, or you don't hear so much about the problem of people coming into our country is because ICE is concentrated on the southern border. They're targeting
right.
one specific group, okay? But those
right.
we have a lot of immigrants who come here to further their education, who are actually looking for high-tech jobs, who are highly educated, who are highly qualified to work in our businesses, and they're getting caught up in the immigration reform too. And this impacts the black community, because these are our new generation of entrepreneurs. These are our new business leaders. These are our new thought leaders. These are our inventors who can create something that could maybe empower not only the community but change the world. These are the same type of people who are getting caught up by Congress's lack of action on immigration reform. And one of the biggest problems was when the Senate came out with the original immigration bill, you know, it's so hard to get Congress to agree on lunch, never mind a bipartisan bill. So it was kind of like everybody was just really happy that, you know, that the Senate actually came up with the bill. But it did have its imperfections. And, you know, one of the issues was for the black community or the black advocates on immigration reform, there was a lot of focus on the issues that impacted the Latino community, not enough on the issues that impacted the black community. And, you know, going back to the whole Netroots Nation, Black Lives Matter thing, this is one of the issues that all coalitions need to understand and realize. If you want black people to help you, if you want black people to work with you, yes, we do realize where there are correlations, but you have to listen to us about the issues that are important to us. And we had not seen that. You know, there was some division behind the Latino and the black immigration group, because it was like, well, it's all about deportation. Yes, it did matter, but let's talk about you know, improving the visa system. You know, there's an arbitrary cap. You know, they say, well, you know, only X amount from this country can come in on this type of visa. You know, they have one vacation, they have one for work, they have one for spouses. And so there are all these arbitrary caps, and it's like, well, you know, if you're from this group, you're allowed to come in, you're from this group. And it set up, you know, it kind of set up a tiered kind of caste system for different people coming in. That's not what real immigration reform should look like. And once again, you have that great blockage known as Congress that can't get anything done. You've got the rabid House members who, you know, as you can see with Donald Trump, and he's hit on the golden formula. I find it ironic to hear the GOP say, we're not racist, and Donald Trump doesn't speak for us. Yes, he does, because look at all of these voters who put him at the top of the poll. Look at what is coming out of people's mouths. The GOP supporters, we're talking, and I'm not saying all of the GOP, but the GOP is controlled by a rabid faction of the party whom they use to win power. Now they don't know how to control them. And, you know, immigration reform, look, if you want to know how powerful it is, ask your boy up in Virginia who lost his seat, Eric Cantor, when how he lost his seat because of immigration reform. And, you know, look how Marco Rubio did that spectacular turnaround when the party turned on him. So, you know, Republicans have an issue with this, and it'll be interesting to see how they translate this during the 2016 race. You know, they're saying one thing, but the supporters of the party are saying another. But the black community has got to realize that you have got to be able, this is a fight where we've got to be in, because it does impact us. Care about making Black Lives Matter. You cannot be silent on this. You cannot sit there after watching your community be oppressed and watch the same oppression occur to another faction and you remain silent. You know, this is just really, really stunning, and I'm hoping that if anybody's out there who has dealt with these issues, if you're a DACA eligible immigrant, or if you're a refugee here and going through the immigration process, if you've been deported or know someone who's been deported, call in and let us know what you're talking about. What's going on in your life? That's 657-383-0995. And if you got something to say, just call it. Talk us down. We love it when people try to call and talk us down. I would love to be wrong.
You conservatives who believe that we crazy as hell, and you know we need to build a 2-mile-high fence around the country to keep all them out, then call us and tell us why you think that. I'm not going to agree with you, but I'm going to respect you enough to let you have your say, and then we're going to ask some serious questions about why you believe what you believe, and we'll let you talk. This is what Dr. Stopping Dirt is about. But I want to talk about some of the myths that we have that get African Americans in a tizzy. And I'm going
to
talk about
the first
one.
They're coming to take our jobs, man.
No, there's another one.
They're coming to take our jobs.
It's another one, though, that gets me and it irks me to the nth degree. And it's the one about how when immigrants come to the United States, that the United States government gives them money to start businesses. That is the biggest myth that exists today, and I'm going to explain to you why. Do y'all not understand how big of a problem we have with the government trying to agree on immigration? Do you think they're going to throw some money at them? Really? They ain't going to give them money. But this is how this is happening, and I'm going to spare this rule because everybody, oh, they like to start businesses. There's two things you have to understand. That anybody who is willing to leave their country to go to another country and start a life, all of them show they have an entrepreneurial spirit. It's just like Americans who want a job real, real bad, to do something in particular. Let's say I want to be a software engineer, but there's no software engineering jobs where I live. Then what do? I get up and I move across the country to Silicon Valley, somewhere nearby, if I have the education, and I go seek that job. Now, this is America, the land of opportunity. So if I'm a person that lives in another country where the opportunities are not that abound, but I keep hearing, it's almost like that little cartoon, American Tale, you know, where the street, this is America, where the streets are paved with gold, I'm going to come here, all right? And because I have taken that, I'm a risk taker. And if you look at American history, and you look at people like John J. Rockefeller, you look at Carnegie, you look at all of those guys, they were immigrant stock.
Mm-hmm.
none of the great American wealth that has ever been generated was generated by jokers that got off the Mayflower. They were generated by people who took and came to this country, took up the stakes, came here, and with two pennies rubbing together real hard, they knew the hustle. So, one, you got a group of people that's coming here. The second thing, if you have any inroads inside of the immigrant community, they do something that we as African Americans, and we can agree, and we, you know, I hate to put a business out there, but they can do something that we find a very hard time doing. That is called work together. If you go into an Asian
community, if it ain't the electric slide or line dancing or the cha-cha slide, we can't do it in unison.
We can't even do that together because there's always somebody who wants to shake it, who wants to show I'll shake it a little different, wants to throw their own style in it. We can't even do that. So if you belong to the Asian community, even the African community, and the Latino community, they have organizations set up that are actually attempting to do something in their community to help each other out. Now, we got NAACP and this, but NAACP won't chase after Confederate flags and sandblast mountains instead of putting together economic development programs in which we actually do some investing in our own community, teaching that, and actually putting together programs to actually make that happen other than they're just talking points. Yes, NAACP, I'm coming. I said that.
You know one of the groups who is? The National Urban League. And if you don't know what they're doing, get with them because it's the Urban League.
But see, the Urban
you're
League.
Looking at the wrong people.
But see, the Urban League, if you look at the Urban League does work with other immigrant groups.
Right. And they do a lot of economic empowerment, they do education.
We're talking about purely African American groups, purely, that are set up just for the point of dealing with our issues. Now, if you go, like for instance, there's a gentleman, and I'm not gonna say his name because I'm a butcher it if I say it, but he's Bangladeshi, and he belongs to the Georgian Bangladeshi Association. Those cats get together on a regular basis. They doing business. Okay? They got the Chamber of Commerce in their group. They doing business. Then you got the Asian community. They doing business. Whether it's lawyers, construction workers, whatever, they do business with one another. Okay? They will take somebody and say, okay, you've been working for me for 5 years. You know this business real well. We got to expand it. We're going to get together. You seem like you got business, and we're going to give you this to help you out. And, we got some. They got a whole distribution center of their economy. They own warehouses. They own factories. They got access to capital from their home countries. Because it just ain't, particularly for the Chinese, it just ain't about sending money home. It's about taking money from home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
And
twisted either, thinking that Mexico is a poor country, because Mexico is the seventh largest manufacturer of automobiles in the United States. This is why TPP was important.
Mm-hmm.
There are Mexican groups that are capable of taking money from Mexico and bringing it into the United States. It ain't all about money leaving. There are rich people who are infusing money into our economy because they realize that this is where you make your money. They're sending people across the border to come here to make money. Those people are coming here legally. And see, the other thing is that our immigration ain't about undocumented. Because you got people who come here on visas, and visas expire, and they disappear. But let me go back still, not get too off of the track of where I was going with these myths. So
yeah,
do
come
not
on
think
back,
that baby. These people, because we do not think that these people come here and they are taking from us. What they're taking is the opportunity that exists. Because one of the things
they're running
that
you can't be mad at them.
We know that there are institutional barriers that exist. Okay, But we also know through Black History, which we are taught every February, which it was long, wish it was longer, but we're taught every February about these African Americans who surpassed the barriers to become icons, which we must study today. Our talented temps, our boule. Okay? That we did some of our hotel brothers like to take and knock down, but these folks got something done. They helped create educational institutions. They helped build businesses like Bonner Brothers and put banks together like Citizens Trust and the old Capital Bank. And they were the ones who built Black Wall Street in Tulsa. They are the ones who helped make Atlanta resurgent. So we have those capabilities, but these people are natural risk takers. And sometimes we as African Americans, because we've been here so long, we take on the same mindset as white Americans, that because we were born here, that we automatically got this God-given right to all the resources here. No, it's about taking advantage of the resources. You got to go out there and get the opportunity. I talk about this a lot in politics, that, you know, my motto in politics, my free talking point has always been freedom, liberty, and equal opportunity. The equal opportunity part is what we need to be taking advantage of. We work to get rid of the institutional barriers that are there to cause that equal opportunity to become more balanced. But people who don't know it exists from other countries, they don't even look for the wall. They just run it. And if they run into it, they just beat it. But see, we grow up knowing that the wall is there, so we don't ever even try to go breach it.
Right.
So
and
But
I think part of the problem is that we have beat the hustle gene out of the Black community. And when I say this, you know, and I was talking with to my daughter yesterday, my daughter and her fiance yesterday, or, well, I hope he'll be a fiance, but I digress. But anyway, we were talking about it. You know, I'm on a mission. I'm getting old. I need some grandbabies. I need all of that. You know, I got one.
So
I got a granddaughter as well.
Whatever daughter you see, we're not gonna call you out. We're not gonna call your boyfriend out.
I'm not gonna call out. But they know what to do. You know, I got a plan. I got a plan that's real devious. I'm gonna tell y'all about it one day. But anyway, you know, we sit here and we tell these kids, you know, American, Black American children. They get into school and we tell them, you got to go to college. You got to go to college. Why? So that you can get a good job with some company to work 20 years. So maybe, well, not now they let you work 19 and a half and then they lay you off. So that you can slave and make wealth for 20 years or forever, how long your tenure is, to make somebody else rich. We do not push them. I'm not saying don't push them to go to college. And college is not for everybody, which is where labor comes in, and where because, you know, I know a lot of great people who would be terrible working in corporate business, but they would make great, you know, tradesmen, okay? We need electricians. We need a lot of the trades that are still there, and that doesn't always take an academic four-year college track. But we tell our youth to do this. We do not tell them about how owning your own business, how creating your own wealth, how to empower yourself financially. And we talked about this, you know, with our show on Black economics and Black Lives Matter. We have got to fix how we talk about it, how we look at it, because we are in the wrong mindset. We are not hustling hard at all. We're buying into it. And when we talk, and when you hear those that say, well, you know, Mexicans are coming to take your job. Really? Are they really taking your jobs, or are they forcing you to fight for the crappy jobs that are left after they took the good living wage job and sent them overseas? So people need to learn how to look with better eyes as to what's saying, how to look down that rabbit hole, how to ask questions, because one of the best ways to keep people from using their power is to keep them fighting amongst themselves. And for you know, and I've heard a lot of hate, you know, I've had some friends who, like, you know, when you go to, like, Home Depot and, you know, you see the people standing out there, you know, can I do this for you, can I do that for you? That's the hustle. That is the hustle in its purest form right there. They're not asking nobody for nothing. They're trying to work using their hands and their labor to create wealth. I'm not mad at them at all. What I'm mad at is that they got to stand at the side of the road and compete for jobs. And for,
and
you know, for the,
my second question is, why, when we know they standing there with their tools going to get ready to do that, why is the brother that know how to lay bricks, why is the brother that know how to lay sheetrock, why is the brother that know how to do electrical work not standing on the corner with
them? And that's a good question. And if you talk now, here's the thing. I've talked to a few contractors. I ran into one yesterday when I was out running errands. And, you know, he had chief laborer with him who happened to be Latino. And so I asked him, you know, do you have black workers? And this is what he told me, okay? This white man. He told me, he said, look, I've tried to work with black laborers. They run off with the tools. I pay them. I don't see them for 2-3 days. Then they show up and want in advance. You know, so there's some things, and I know some people are going to be jumping all over me for this, but we got to recognize the truth. I'm not saying all black laborers are like that, but you do have some out there. When they get that first check, they retire that same day. They, you know,
hey,
they
you know,
come in.
You know, you got to talk to me. I'm going to tell you from a position, you know, I'm working with my uncles at our factory in Conyers, okay? And we have black, we have Latinos, and we have whites working in that factory. All right? Now, my Latinos come to work every day. They on time. I ain't going to sit there and say they the hardest workers, but they're on time. They there every day, and they stay on their jobs majority of the time. Okay? We can go to them. You know, the least of the guys, we can go to the guys at any point in time and say, hey, we need you to work over another. The women will look at you kind of crazy if you need to work over because they got to go home and take care of business still. But the guys always ready to they use shit, yeah, let's go. You know what I'm saying? If you issue them tools, you can go back and find them tools in that toolbox 3 weeks later. Bro, you missing something. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you took it home in your pocket by mistake, whatever, but you're missing something.
And, you know, we're not talking about all of them.
And a lot of them are temporary, and we're not talking about everybody, but a lot of these people are also temporary. So the thing is, they come in now, and you're trying to get a job. Usually you come to us, and with the, you know, it's like a 90-day period that we watch. You know, and you can get hired before them 90 days if you go in there and bust your tail. But we have this really, really bad habit of working on Saturdays, and my uncles will tell you. If you're a temporary and you don't come to work on a Saturday, you might as well not come back on Monday. You know, and it's, and I got a lot, I know on my particular line, I don't went through four young brothers that have a lot of, they came in and they worked hard, they were getting on to it, but when it comes to, you know, Friday, and they hear they got to work on Saturday. It's like, man, I want to go out tonight. Turn up, da 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 da. Dude, get this cheese. Get hired first, then you can ask for a Saturday off if you need. You know what I'm saying? But you, these are young cats. They like, you know, between 18 and 24. Get mad at you when you tell them, dude, I need you to wear a belt to work because I don't need you. You can't work with boxes with one hand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making boxes. You can't make boxes with one hand. You know what I'm saying? You can't pack them, fold them, whatever I need you to do to them. You can't do that with one hand.
I bet you
know
I can't because I'm a bad mamma jamma, but that's just.
You're an extension to the rule. You know but what I'm getting at is exactly what we're talking about. It's about the hustle. You know what I'm saying? If you're an immigrant, in this country, you automatically, and I said in the beginning, you automatically got a hustle mentality because that's where you was from. In some cases, people have traveled several thousand miles in some very hard conditions to get here. So you think they traveled that far not to do something? And some of us can't go 2 miles down the street to go get it.
Right, because we got folks who come over here with about $4.68 in their pocket. They will come over here. They will stack their money by pooling resources with others. They will bring up family. You come see that family a couple of years later. Everybody got their own store, their own house, their own car. And they will. And what makes me mad is that you got brothers and sisters still on the block crying about, well, look what they did for the Latinos, or look what they did for the Asian community. And, you know, the Asian community, they ain't starting with nobody. They up there handling their business. And that's another conversation we need to talk about, because a lot of the wealth that comes in the Asian community comes out of the black community. You know, that's another part. We can get into that later. But you can't be mad at those who come over here and use the system that's been here, that we
can
realize of as black people and making it work for them. You can't be mad.
They don't realize what we want. They selling it to us. Shoot, guess what? Black folks probably consume more Chinese food than any other ethnic group other than the Chinese.
Hey, and we in Georgia, it's hard to get good Chinese food. I say this as a New Yorker, and let me tell you, anybody from the North who comes down south, the first thing we ask is, where can we get some decent Chinese food from? I don't know. I'm just saying. I got to put that out there.
I'm just saying it's good.
Y'all ain't had
consume.
No real Chinese food.
I know for me, I eat Chinese at least 2-3 times a week sometimes. So, I mean, you know, I know we consume, because you never – if you can find a wing spot, and that wing spot most likely is going to be owned by the Chinese, because you might got a brother or two that own one. You got the supply store, usually going to be owned by the Chinese. We're not going to say Chinese, they're Asians.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then you got the nail store, usually operated by Asians. And those places are packed on a 24 hours, 365 day of the year basis. Those folks gonna make money, and you know what? Get shows meet over that they doing what they doing. It's working, because during the summer, and if you've watched during the year, their kids, they don't go home. They can't be going home, because that place be open from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night. The kids in the back doing homework, in between homework, filling orders. You know what I'm saying, on the grill, whatever, sweeping, doing whatever. Because they stacking cheese, send their children to college so their kids either, one, come back, expand this into a super business, or go be doctors and lawyers, and they'll shut that down, and the next generation going to come up through and take over the shops.
Well, immigrants understand the importance of education and how it moves you up the ladder of economic prosperity. They get it. Americans, we're out there. You know, I live in Southwest Atlanta, you know, and one of the things that struck me was you go to a PTA meeting. I live in Hayville, and we've got, you know, a significant Latino community. We also have some Vietnamese and Korean households, along with black. Now, the public schools, all the white people left a long time ago. They either go to Woodward Academy or St. John, the Catholic school. You don't see too many white people in the public schools. But when you go to a PTA meeting on the south side of town, particularly one where there's a heavy concentration of immigrants in the community, you will see, I sat in a PTA meeting, I almost cried, because there was about six to eight, you know, African-Americans in the room, about 50 Latino parents. They had to have a translator for the non-English-speaking parents who were there. But they were there. And I looked out on the football field. There was football practice going on. All the black parents were out there hoping that their child was going to be the next Cam Newton. Now, they didn't think about what would happen if their child sustained an injury, you know, somewhere early in their career, and are unable to do what you put your hopes on, because we're finding, you know, we see a lot in the athletics community where you have those who get injured, and then we find out they can't reach. I mean, my daughter just graduated from high school, and let me tell you, we got some folks who are going to college. they were walking down the aisle. But these kids, according to the state of Georgia, have an education and they're going out there. Now, these parents who are pushing their kids to get over, you want the next Beyonce, you want the next JC, you know, listen to my mixtape, all of that. We're forgetting the basic construct of they can take everything from you, but they can never take your mind. If you want to build wealth, you have to have an education. That is part of the foundation of building it on. The immigrant community, regardless of which one we're talking about, understands that much more better than the American black community, because we've been programmed and driven insane trying to emulate those who really want to use you. And I believe George Carlin said it best. It's a big club. You're not in it. What they really need is a class of obedient workers, and that's what we're training kids to be. We're not training them to, we got the hustle gene. It's a DNA, and you see it around you every day. You know, when you go in the black communities and you see these shops, now some of them give us duplicate services and some that we don't need, but these people have all made a decision to empower themselves economically, and we have to start realizing how economics plays into this, how it plays into the role of immigration, how it hurts us in the long run, and what we can do to make it better. You know, we've got to start working with our Latino brothers and sisters. We have to start having sitting down and have a dialogue about the problems that we have. Oh, that's going to be tough. You know, we have to have a conversation with the Asians.
We sit down, it comes as much as learning their languages, learning their culture, you know, because guess what? They don't learn at all. You ever go up into the hair store and talk to the little Asian ladies up in there when you get, you ever watch that? That's them conversation.
Yeah.
When they know they're finna make a sale. It kills me because I'm like, oh, girl, you can go, girl, you're gonna look really good in that, like that. You're going to be fly. You got it going on. You're going to turn up this weekend, huh? Okay.
But let me tell you. But in terms of the Asian community, one of the things, you know, there is a cultural gap that exists, because you'll hear a lot of people, well, you know, I don't like shopping in that store because they rude. Now, if you don't understand the culture and how they interact with customers in their country. And sometimes it is rude because they only give them what they've been given out here. I've heard some brothers and sisters go into an Asian store and come out all out their mouth. And then I've seen some, you know, Asian storekeepers where I got to say, you know what, I'm going to try to help you out today because you're about to get jacked up. You can't talk to people like that. You can't sling money across the counter. You know, the things that we've heard, you know, from that we've said in the black community.
Not understanding some of them trying to protect their stores because they feel like we're going to steal from them because they've been stolen from. You know, and that comes back again. We emulating the majority customer, the majority culture in our nation, because what happens is, we feel like sometimes African Americans, and I've heard this, and I've even felt like it at some points in time in my life, that things have been taken from me, so now I feel like I got to take from somebody else. And you have, and the lower down the economic scale you get, sometimes that thought pattern becomes more and more pervasive. I mean, you feel like you got to do what you got to do. These folks in my neighborhood taking from me, so I got to get something from them. It's wrong, but it exists. It doesn't exist with everybody, but it's enough people who believe it and act upon it that they are going to make a defense against it. Because I was in I think I was in a hair shop with a friend of mine. And, you know, that was watching the interaction. And I'm sitting there thinking, we need to go because they could get ugly. Because the thing was, is the Asian shopkeeper was trying to help the customer, But the customer was ignorant acting to begin with, and because she can't talk, she couldn't, the customer who was African American, her ass could barely speak damn proper American English. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Vietnamese, and I'm assuming the lady was Vietnamese because of her tag and the last name was Nguyen. So, she was having a hard time speaking English. And so you got these two people having a communication problem, and the next thing I know, you got the African-American calling out a little slam-off bitch. Excuse my language, but that was going down. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa. Y'all need to slow down.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about English, I mean, if we can't really talk about English because, you know, if you live in Tri-City, and if you heard anyone speak fluent Kapaa, you'll be like, what the hell is you talking about? And that is a piece of East Pointese, we like to call it. It's one word, talking about. But
you know,
we got
these two people, and if we would just take a time and to understand one another, and not understand cross-cultural relations can be somewhat tedious at times and somewhat frustrating. But you know, a lot of these folks, you know you can't damn talk. Folks pick at you at the house about it. So you know you can't damn talk. You know none of it. You know that you don't. Let's keep it real. If we can have a keep it real moment. You know you don't talk like them white folks. Okay?
Well, it depends. Because my husband talks about me. He goes, He talks about me when I pick up the phone because he's like, yeah. I can tell when you're doing business. He calls it my John Marshall Law School voice. Hello, this is Stacey. How may I help you? You know, but that's kind
of
the...
You need to learn how to use your John Marshall Law School voice. Use what they taught you in school. Learn to... You know, go out and speak clearly to folks. You just can't go talking to everybody like you're talking home. I mean, I'm a completely different. That you have dealt with me. You know,
unfortunately, yes, I have.
It's a completely different conversation when we ain't on the air. I mean, for real.
I know, and here's the thing.
People think we're wild now.
They need to hear us all when we're talking to each other and how this show kind of came about out of those phone calls. But,
yeah, so you know there's a language going on. So we have to work on communicating with one another and understanding that this is one of the reasons we have problems with this immigration issue because we're not learning how to deal with one another. You know, so we have to be intentional. You know, my pastor back in LaGrange talks about intentional friendships. That you got to be intentional to become friends with people. And a lot of us are not very intentional about the relationships we have. They just kind of happen. And then you wonder why you don't like the people you're around because you just kind of let it happen. You don't really, you know, if you don't like roguish people, but you end up being around roguish people all the time because you just don't allow that to happen. You made more intent to deal with people who are honest and were, you know, hardworking. If you don't make that, you find yourself around people you don't like. Since I've learned about making intentional relationships, if I see somebody that, whether it's male or female, that I want to be friends with, I start trying to make intentional moves to become that person's friend.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're supposed to do. You say, hey, I want you. And I know it sounds corny. You got to say, hey, I want to be friends. You got to be. We need to do that as a culture and say, hey, we want to be allies. And we're very good at stating that we're enemies. We got to start saying, hey, we want to be allies. How can we do this? You know, learn, you know, black folks, let's learn Korean and Chinese. You know what I'm saying? Let's learn how to at least say thank you. Every time I go to the Chinese restaurant and the little lady over here at the Chinese restaurant over here on South Deshaun, she thinks funny as hell. Because every time she gives me my order, I say, shishi. Thank you. And she gets there and she be like, oh, thank you, Mr. Smith. I appreciate that. Welcome. And then she's fine. But I make that intention. She knows who I am when I come through the door. We have a working relationship. She kind of knows, hey, and I'm going to put the extra sprouts in there for you because you're a good customer. Right. Because I made an intention to learn something about their culture. We learned it to say gracias or whatever it is, whatever language we're playing with, you know, with the people that we're doing business with or hanging out with, you find as long, because they're doing a very good job of trying to emulate our language when trying to sell us something. I mean, think
right.
about it. You've seen commercials.
Well,
you've seen commercials for freecreditscore.com. Your credit can slide.
I'm through with you. I'm through with you. But you ain't lying. I mean, you hear the pandering. You know, when politicians come to talk to the black community, they drop those N's, you know. I mean, they drop the G's and, you know, they kind of put on a passive vocal inflection when talking to us. And so, and, you know, like you said, those commercials. Wait a minute, what did you say?
You said, your credit is fly. Pop rocking and dropping, baby. Pop rocking and dropping.
And you see those commercials and you go, really? Really? I mean, the McDonald's one, you know, you see it in media. How
you
they
know when McDonald's is talking to black folks, you know when they're talking to us, because it no longer is McDonald's, it's Mickey D's.
Oh, that's right. That's true. I'm sorry. I forgot. Yes, it is Mickey D. Walmart is Wally World.
Right.
You know, we got it. So, and I'm tired. Look, people are blowing up my box on Facebook. Don't text me. Call in. 657-383-0995. And
we
just
got
have your
to stop playing.
Right. Stop playing and just call in. But one thing I did want to talk about real quick, and I brought, you know, I got to keep coming back to, in terms of Black Lives Matter, how all of this fits in to that immigration reform. And in terms of deportation issues, there's a story, I was looking for it. The guy's name is David Pierre, and he was born in Antigua. And he moved to the Virgin Islands as a young child. And he came to Jersey, Tri-City area. He married, had six kids. Two of them are in the service. But dude was locked up. And in this piece, it says for the last 3 years, and this was done in 2013. I don't know if he's out, but he got caught up. And got deported for something that he did when he was a stupid child. You know, we've all done stupid things in our lives. He got caught up on a minor marijuana case, I believe it is. And he got flagged by federal authorities, and he was detained. He was detained in 2010, and as the writing of this article, 2013, he was still in detention. And he says, I'm here for something like 20 years. I paid my debt to society, and I turned my life around, and now I have this issue. I have a family here. My wife is here. Everything I own is here. And the problem is that we all know, African Americans, we're very aware of the problems in our criminal justice system and how it is skewed against people of color. And we're seeing the same tactics that were used against African Americans during the civil rights struggle towards Latinos. We see how they have been vilified, you know, when, you know, you see people say, you know, when you hear people like Steve King talking about, yeah, they got camped like watermelons from pushing dope, you know. And then you listen to, like, you know, Sandra Bland. Well, she had drugs in her system. You know, there's some dots we need to start connecting and realizing why we got to get in on this fight. But the economic side is really, really the biggest issue for us right now. And I'm really, really tired of hearing that whole they're taking our jobs, because they're not. When immigrants come into our economy, once they are not under that shadow. Let's face it, our current system, you can have a child and that child can grow up and become a citizen on its own before you can get through it the way the current system works. Think you just go in with your paperwork and your check and you just skip out of there like you're going for your driver's license. It is a long, convoluted, complicated process with a bunch of agencies that don't talk together, that do not coordinate, that makes it very, very difficult for you to become a legal citizen of the United States.
That legalism part of the United States, and we got right under 4 minutes left. But, something that was said in Angela Davis's interview,
mm-hmm.
that I watched as a veteran, and it always pisses me off, is that you can go join the United States military.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't even, to tell you the honest truth, you can be undocumented and go join the United States military. They will take you. They not going to deport you. They will send you will get. They will make sure you get whatever you need to be able to operate. They will send you off to boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can get out. Still don't have no legal status. You done served under our flag. You done
and
went
they'll
to
deport
combat.
You. They will deport
right.
you after your service is over.
So my question is, if I can serve this country honorably, go fight its wars, defend its freedoms, why is it not a law that the moment I get an honorable discharge from the United States military or any of its uniformed services, that I automatically be conferred citizenship? You know what I'm saying? That should be law.
I guess the question that's asking is, did you pick something, build something, or take care of somebody's kids? Because otherwise, no. You give us your tithes, your poor. We keep forgetting there's an asterisk that we can't see. It's written in invisible ink on the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, we're meant for you. We ain't talking to you.
So some restrictions do apply. And act fast because supplies are limited.
Because it should not be it ain't even a fast track for you to become a citizen if you're a veteran. You just, thank you for your service. You can stay. But we'll know about that voting. We'll know about that voting.
Mm-mm.
Well, we got 90 seconds left in the show.
Into extra innings this week?
No, we're not going to extra inning this week. We're not going to do it. But, and who calling in at the last second here?
Oh, see, a day late and $4 short.
Yes, caller.
Hello?
You got 60 seconds.
Oh, sorry. I thought the show was until 4 p.m.
I know who that is.
But next week, people, we're going to a very, very interesting subject.
Uh-oh.
And it's going to be feminism.
Oh, Lord.
So y'all might want, because me and Stacey have been talking about this quite a while. And, yeah, I got some interesting things I got to say as a man. So,
the way you say it, as a man, Trojan man.
Oh, gosh. but this is Dime Five Data with Scott Smith, and we'll see y'all again next Sunday.
Peace.